You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, it's your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Tuesday, the 26th of November 2024. The Australian share market fell today. The S&P ASX 200 down 0.7%. We'll have the details with Karen Jorritsema from RBC Capital Markets in a few moments. But first, to your retirement, where Australia's self-managed super fund industry has hit a milestone. The Australian Taxation Office says the total estimated assets of SMSFs hit $1 trillion for the first time in the September quarter. There are more than 621,000 SMSFs. Most members are male and 85% are over the age of 45. So for more about what they are and what they do, I spoke with Ben Nash, a financial advisor at Pivot Wealth. Are you surprised that a lot of people have taken to this?
Not really. I think that the positioning of self-managed super funds as a vehicle that allows you to take full control of your superannuation money is something that's really appealing to a lot of people. I think that people are sort of coming to realize that they need to look out for their own interests. But I think that that can be a bit of a false flag as well, in that these days with a lot of non-SMSF super funds, you can still have a high level of control. And I think a lot of people don't quite realize that, but I don't think there's any surprises on the popularity of them.
So as I mentioned, like more than 600,000 SMFs out there, but are they for everyone?
No, I don't think so. I think that there's only a really small segment of the population where an SMSF is the most appropriate super fund. I think that self-managed super funds are the only superannuation fund that allow you to buy direct property and to take out a mortgage. And again, I think that that speaks to the reason why these funds are so popular, because Australians love property, love investing in property. Property's been a great investment for a lot of people, made a lot of people a lot of money. And look, I think in that instance, if you do really want to buy a property in your super fund, or if that really is the best move for you, then sure, SMSFs are a great fund to look at. But I do think, you know, as a financial planner and having seen a number of people go down that path, that that actually isn't for everyone. I do believe deeply in property as one of the probably the most effective way that people can grow their wealth. But doing it inside a self-managed super fund, it is something that it is expensive. It's an expensive exercise. And I think a lot of people don't quite realize that cost coming into it. I also think that for retirees, self-managed super funds can be good, particularly for people that have large share portfolios in their superannuation fund, because for those people, you actually get the franking credits, so the tax credits that get attached to dividends that get paid, they get refunded to your super fund essentially as cash. And so I've worked with a lot of retiree clients over the years that they actually get quite big tax refunds from the ATO as a result of those franking credit benefits.
So what do you think a person should really ask themselves before considering an SMSF?
Well, I think that the big thing is that you want to make sure that the benefits that you're going to get are going to outweigh any costs that you pay, because self-managed super funds are more expensive than non-self-managed super funds. When you have an SMSF, you're required to do an annual tax return, an annual audit, and then you've got the actual administration costs. And that means that for most people, particularly, you know, if you've got a super fund balance below sort of $1 million, which is, you know, most people across the country, that it will be more expensive to run a self-managed super fund rather than not. I think the other thing that people need to ask is why, and what is the reason for that? Because if you can get what you want in another super fund that's easier for you to manage, that's cheaper for you to operate, that involves less of your time in terms of the administration and upkeep of that fund, then you sort of have to wonder why you're actually doing it. And like I said, the two big whys are retiree portfolios, big share portfolios, and property. But specifically for property, because I've seen a lot of people go wrong with this, that you need to ask, is this absolutely the best move for me?
And finally, you mentioned earlier about control. A lot of people like to set up their own SMSFs because they can control their own investments. But you said that those in non-SMSFs can also, to some extent, control what they're investing in too, right? How so?
Absolutely. Yeah, look, there's a lot of super funds these days that will allow you to invest into direct shares, and you can pick those shares and invest. There's a large number that allow you to invest with ETFs. And then beyond that, that you can choose your own mix of managed funds. Like basically in pretty much most super funds in Australia, you can choose the investment options that you want to use to make up your super money. And technology is making it easier and easier. So you can get a lot of that control without having the extra expense, the extra admin burden of a self-managed super fund.
That is Ben Nash there from Pivot Wealth.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
To the Australian share market now, which fell today, the S&P ASX 200 down 0.7%. It comes as US President-elect Donald Trump announced on his own social media platform, Truth Social, that he'll sign all necessary documents to charge Mexico and Canada a 25% tariff on all products coming into the US. China will be imposed with an additional 10% tariff on top of existing charges. Now, he's blamed China and what he's called Mexico and Canada's ridiculous open borders for increasing drug supply, particularly fentanyl, into the US. So as a result, the Australian share market fell 0.7%. The Australian dollar also tumbled to its low as 64.4 US cents, but has recovered some of that. For more, I spoke with Karen Jarotzma from RBC Capital Markets.
Yeah, the Australian dollar definitely had a bit of a wobble today as people tried to, you know, really think about what this meant. I've got to say this much. I don't think it was a huge surprise. I think Trump had been very good at messaging during his campaign that he was definitely going to put tariffs on. And certainly the last time he was in power, we definitely saw that. I think today we've seen some movement. If you look at stocks like BlueScope Steel, they had a significant run on the back of those tariffs, given the implications for them. But broadly outside of that, it hasn't been too significant. You know, we haven't seen the big move in the resources that you might have. So it's probably been very well messaged, I think.
Since the election, though, we have seen this Trump trade that many people have been talking about, particularly in the US. We've seen a little bit of a reversal lately now in Australia. What do you think happens now?
For the Trump trade, I think it's been very supportive for markets. You know, we've seen this great rally in both Australia and the US on the back of this enthusiasm for Trump, I guess. It probably is sustained. I think Australia is pretty famous for having a, as we saw, call it the Santa Claus rally into year end. And it definitely feels to me like that looks like it's well and truly underway and certainly got some legs to keep going. The US is also seasonally stronger in November and December. So that also seems to be supporting what we are seeing at the moment. And typically they get that pullback in January and February as things ease off. So look, it looks like we're going to sail through the end of the year in pretty good shape, and feels like the market's going to be pretty kind to us as we head in towards Christmas.
We've still got other influences, though, apart from Trump, though. We've got slow Chinese growth, geopolitical issues, the possibility of high rates for longer. What do you think all of this means for investors?
I think the big thing for investors is definitely going to be considering inflation and the rates movements. If we are going to see a situation where Trump's putting on tariffs and then potentially spending more money, that won't be helpful for the US inflation environment. And if Australia's heading into the election, the federal election early next year, I suspect we'll probably see some more public stimulus there as well, which again means inflation becomes a problem. We, you know, far from having that under control. So it could mean that the rates environment's not as friendly as we would like it to be, and potentially we don't see those rate cuts people had been factoring in. At RBC at the moment, we've just pushed our RBA rate cuts back to May. So already we've pushed back what we're expecting to next year, and that could get worse if inflation continues to persist.
That seems like a common theme. A lot of investment banks and a lot of economists at the big four banks pushing back their expectations now to May. If we talk about some equity moves today, the banks retreating, in particular the Commonwealth Bank, it's been interesting to see Commonwealth Bank shares really surge, consistently hitting new records, despite some people saying valuations are pretty high. Yesterday, APRA said it would not reduce mortgage serviceability buffers. What's your take on the banks?
The banks have definitely been a massive talking point, and I think CBA in particular, given the, you know, we continue to see CBA close at fresh highs consistently for the past 6 months now. So, and they've been a big driver of the uptick given the size of the index. So look, that APRA move yesterday hit every other bank but CBA, which was surprising given the size of their mortgage book as well. So it definitely seems to me that CBA has got its own momentum that doesn't seem to be too closely related to what's actually going on at CBA per se. I think it seems to be a function of the broader market and just a, you know, momentum trade as much as anything else.
And finally, where do you see the opportunities for investors at the moment?
Interesting question, given where we are on valuation and the market's at, you know, record highs. But I always see opportunities in the Aussie market. I think you can get some access to some of those Trump trades through things like James Hardie that continues to offer you exposure to the US housing play. There's always opportunities in some of the resources which have been knocked around a bit with these questions around China and the trade there. So I think they look pretty good. And then, of course, we've seen big moves in some of these stocks that are good companies but have had, you know, founder issues like WiseTech and MinRes. And they're offering some opportunities if you're a believer in the underlying business that, you know, maybe can ignore the issues they've had of late and look through that into the next year, into when the, you know, the business, the focus returns back to what actually is the underlying business, not the CEO. So there's always lots to do in equity markets.
That's Karen Drotsmut there from RBC Capital Markets.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.